My name is Erica Endemann, and you are listening to CHUO 89.1 FM. During the course of the pandemic, there have been a number of examples of significant protests with extreme police intervention. The Black Lives Matter protests over the murder of George Floyd have been one prominent example, and more recently in Toronto, police broke up homeless encampments at Lamport Stadium. This Tuesday, a workshop being held online is taking a close look at how organizations preparing to protest, rally, or march for change can ensure that they have tools to de-escalate violence or harassment before they hit the streets. Sharmeen Khan from Tools for Change, a group that hosts workshops to help develop skills in fighting for justice, and one of the hosts of the event, says that the workshop will be focusing on planning ahead for police interactions and other confrontations with counter-protesters.
So some of the different confrontations that we're trying to talk about, in order to really hone in on how to keep people safe, like how we can still come together, we can mobilize, we can still protest and have our message be heard, but also do it in a way where we're safe and we don't get distracted from these kind of counter protesters that might show up, or how we can sort of deal with the police in a way so it doesn't like usurp our protest, but sometimes it can.
Planning for these circumstances is necessary. Leila Chiwasi is from the Ottawa Black Diaspora Coalition, an organization in Ottawa that focuses on combating all anti-Black forms of systemic racism. Chiwasi says that examples of these confrontations are ones that are seen in the city at every event.
There have been a lot of those incidents. I think that a lot of people take advantage of the hurt and the rage and the vulnerability of Black folks in the spaces of organizing and direct action. If I was to start anywhere when it comes to the incidents I've seen, is namely the ways in which the police antagonizes activists.
Khan says sometimes solidarity in numbers can be enough to ignore instigators, especially if they're outside of the group or across the street. When they convene into the crowd is when it gets more difficult.
Now, one of the biggest rules of that kind of confrontation is to not feed into the anger that the other person might want to cause a physical altercation or a fight. Now, when people are like taping everything, the use of a video can be used to like really skew the narration of what your action could be. So, yeah, we encourage people to be calm, to state their position, to state their messaging, and to even just repeat it over and over again, not to like, you know, give in to that argument.
What Khan observes with the police, however, is an entirely different situation.
Now, another thing that I've observed a lot when it comes to the police is mostly when they are trying to break up a protest or direct protesters that are different routes and are aggressive, you know, directly aggressive to where protesters might want to march, or if they have locked down. And the most aggressive you'll see police is when they're trying to remove protesters.
Fundamentally, the workshop is meant to be realistic about the risks involved when it comes to protesting. It is going to talk about different scenarios and decisions that activists have to be prepared to make, including physical harm from the police.
A lot of activists have to make choices about, you know, how far they want to go. If you're willing to be arrested, then you might choose particular things. But if you cannot or don't want to be arrested, often that means complying with the police and leaving.
Chiwasi has found herself in uneasy situations with police before. During the celebration of the 150th Canada Day, activists convened on Parliament Hill to protest for Indigenous rights. Chiwasi was among them, and she found herself in an increasingly hostile situation with a police officer.
I remember the police officers, the way that they were talking with the activists, and I remember engaging in one conversation with a specific police officer where it was just back and forth and back and forth. And some of the things that he was saying were just so, not surprising, but it was disturbing to me that the police officer was engaging with me in a way that was escalating and antagonizing. I don't think that there has been any event that I have been to, organized, or helped with in Ottawa when it comes to specifically Black or Indigenous organizing, that there haven't been passerbyers, random groups of people that will show up to just let us know that we don't matter, that we're wasting time. There's always the traditional go back to your country. Definitely a lot of name calling, a lot of slurs being thrown around.
In the tension of the moment, Chiwasi had to make a decision about how to respond to the officer and be realistic about the power dynamics that she was confronted with.
In that moment, it was like a lot of self-talk. I was doing a lot of trying to calm myself down because I remember just at some point being like, this is so petty, like this is so embarrassing. And these are things that I was saying to him. I was like, the fact that you in your uniform holding onto your gun as you're stopping people who are indigenous to these lands from taking space on the lawn of like an institution, a building that represents the genocide of their people. And so we're going back and forth. I was getting more and more upset because, yeah, it's embarrassing. And yeah, I can look down and be laughing internally about him. But also he's still a man with a gun and he still represents a body that has historically erased people who look like me from this world.
The worst potential outcome was not something that she had the luxury of dismissing from her mind.
And one thing that I wish more people knew about is that I had to think about the ways in which my positionality could be a reason to end my life, and that would just be it.
The workshop on Tuesday is going to be from a trauma-informed lens, which means that participants will be encouraged to consider how altercations of these events can bring up unpleasant or traumatizing memories of discrimination. In the past, Khan says that activists have prepared for these interactions in the most literal sense.
For decades, there were actually these kind of direct action trainings that really come from the more civil disobedience history coming from states, and also some in Canada, where people would actually practice. So with the, you know, the lunch counter protests in the South, like Black activists would, you know, practice with each other, being stood on, coffee being spilled on them, milkshakes, and them holding their ground.
She encourages people who are thinking of participating to do the same.
I mean, any kind of training is not going to hurt you, right? And so a really effective tool that people have used in direct action called a half-a-line kind of basically creates an area where you're linked up and you're going to be confronting an oppositional force. You know, so it could be the general public, it could be a more right-wing counter-protest or whatever, and you practice. You practice how you're going to react to people being in your face, possibly using really harmful language, being able to ask for yourself what emotions are coming up for you and how you can seek support and make decisions for yourself in response to that.
Because the workshop will be held online, this kind of training won't be available. But it's something that Chiwasi considers interesting advice when thinking about preparing to protest.
It is important for people to realize if you get spat on, that's a violation of your body. I don't know a lot of people that know how to react to that safely in that situation, or getting spat on and called the N-word, or having a bunch of slurs and oppressive rhetoric yelled at you for while someone is in your face in an already heightened and scary and very pressure-filled space.
Khan explains that we see protest efforts fall apart when people are not prepared. But she also doesn't want anyone who shows up in solidarity to these events to believe that they will be immune to this treatment, even if they're not a minority.
But I don't want you to think that, oh, because I'm a white person, I'm somehow above or exempt from that kind of harassment or violence. Because essentially for racists, anyone in solidarity with Indigenous or Black people or people of color, seen as race traitors, you know. Now the police might pause for a second, you know, if they're met with a bunch of, you know, white folks who are providing the barrier. But the police will go through anyone to get to the other side, you know. Your whiteness or your privilege doesn't prevent.
She lived this firsthand during a protest she attended in the United States. In an attempt to stop one of her comrades from being arrested, she engaged in what is called a puppy pile, essentially piling on top of the person to stop an arrest. But when she did this, her legs were severely beaten by an officer to the point where she could not stand the next day and she had a concussion.
Now, my instinct, of course, was to, like, I'm going to prevent that arrest of my comrades, but I wasn't prepared for the harm I received from, I don't know if it was one or several police officers who were trying to get their guy.
Although that was traumatizing, and Khan says she couldn't have prepared for it, she was prepared that it might happen. Khan and Chiwasi suggest that participants always check in with the organizers of an event ahead of time to gauge what their goals are or what they would like you to do. And Chiwasi asks allies not to speak with police or the media, as most groups have assigned people to do that. Both say that rigorous safety plans and backup plans are made for these events, trying to prepare for any and all situations. Most events have support workers, blockers, volunteers, and people assigned to speak with the police and media. But Chiwasi knows that even with a safety plan, there's a lot that can't be anticipated.
I wish that more people understood, like, the vulnerability and the danger that people put themselves into for their community when they're planning these actions, but at the same time, the compassion and care for all people that participate in these actions that usually is in the forefront of organizing is to create a safer society for everyone.
More about the event can be found online at toolsforchange.net.